Thank you. Swami Maharaja Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Anand Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai, ISKCON founder Acharya Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Nam Acharya Shila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Gaura Prema Nanda ki jai. Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Vishnu. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki Thank you. Hare Krishna. In the name of us too, I would like to welcome all of you for this last session in our lecture on the subject matter of searching out the will of Lord Krishna. We will be giving this class as a shared class. It is on text 18, yes. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Please. Eshavaya Bhagavan Sakshat.
Adya Narayana Bhuman.
Adya Narayana Bhuman.
Esha,
Esha,
this,
why,
positively,
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead,
Saksha,
original,
Adyaha,
the first,
Narayana,
the supreme. Lord who lies down on the water.
The Supreme Lord who lies down on the water.
Bhuman.
The Supreme Enjoyer.
Supreme Enjoyer.
Mohayan.
Bewildering.
Mayaya.
Mayaya.
By his self-created energy.
By his self-created energy.
Lokam. The planets.
Guraha,
Guraha,
who is inconceivable,
Sarati,
moves,
Vrishnishu,
among the Vrishni family. Translation. This Shri Krishna, for those of you who just join us today, the context is as follows. Grandfather Bhishma, the sire or the leader of the mighty Kuru dynasty, is lying on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just moments before passing away from this planet. Not really moments, but he's on his deathbed, and bed of arrows. And he is receiving the five Pandavas who are led by Lord Krishna to say goodbye to him. It's their last meeting. And they are very affectionately bound together, and Bhishma Dev wants to give them a very substantial advice in parting. These advices have two dimensions. One is he instructs Yudhishthira, the future king, in the duties of a king, the dharma, the Raja dharma. And the second is he opens his heart about devotional or bhakti subjects. And one is searching for the plan of Krishna. How can we know the plan of Krishna, the will of Krishna? Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj and myself planned the three lectures ahead of time because we felt that at this time in the Croatian Yatra it is very helpful if each devotee for himself and herself makes a search in his life, a search which will connect them with the plan, the will of Lord Krishna, and in this way reconnect if necessary or intensify the already known sambandha, the relationship to Krishna, and in this way overcome all obstacles in their own spiritual lives and in the spreading of Krishna consciousness. So please listen carefully. Today is Sunday, that means a free day. We don't have to work or we don't have many things, so I think it would be nice if at the end of the lecture we hear any relevant questions which you might have and discuss them in an attempt to find answers to questions. Good. So let us now focus on the scene. Here's Grandfather Bhishma on his deathbed, giving instruction to those people whom he considers maybe most closest to his heart. He speaks also in the presence of
Lord Krishna. In this verse, he acknowledges the supreme position of Krishna. The translation goes like this. This Sri Krishna, he says this. This means, look, he's right there. He's just standing before you. This, not anyone else. This Sri Krishna is no other than the inconceivable original personality of Godhead. He is the first Narayan, supreme enjoyer. But he is moving amongst the descendants of King Vrishni, just like one of us. And he is bewildering us with his self-created energy. Perfect. The Vedic system of acquiring knowledge is the deductive process. Who knows what it is? The deductive process.
What does this mean?
Descending. It comes down. What does this mean? Knowledge comes down. This is a new concept. Is it raining or how does it come down? It is received through disciplic succession. Yes, and it is accepted also. That's very important. The ascending process is something else. It's you make your own ideas and you bring them together in a hopefully logical sequence and then come to a conclusion about certain things. Deductive process we say it's descending, but it means to accept knowledge, to receive it, not to create it yourself. This Vedic knowledge is received perfectly by disciplic succession from authorities. Such knowledge is never dogmatic, as ill-conceived by less intelligent persons. The mother is the authority to verify the identity of the father. She is the authority for such confidential knowledge. Therefore, authority is not dogmatic. It's not forced, in other words, it's natural. In the Bhagavad Gita, this truth is confirmed in the fourth chapter, Bhagavad Gita 4.2, and the perfect system of learning is to receive it from authority. The very same system is accepted universally as truth, but only the false agua speaks against it. For example, modern spacecraft fly in the sky, and when scientists say that they travel to the other side of the moon, men believe these stories blindly because they have accepted the modern scientists as authorities. The authorities speak, and the people in general believe them. But in the case of Vedic truths, they have been taught not to believe. They have been taught by the scientists, don't believe this, believe us. Even if they accept them, they give a different interpretation. Each and every man wants a direct perception of Vedic knowledge, but foolishly, they deny it. This means that the misguided man can believe one authority, the scientist, but will reject the authority of the Vedas. Well, the result is that people have degenerated. Here is an authority speaking about Sri Krishna as the original personality of Godhead and the first Narayana. Even such an impersonalist as Acharya Shankara has said in the beginning of his commentation on the Bhagavad Gita that Narayana, the personality of Godhead, is beyond the material creation. And Prabhupada gives the Sanskrit, Narayana paro vyakta andam avyakta sambhavam andas yatas tvime loka sapta dvipa chamedini. So this means the Lord is not a creation of the material world. He's beyond this as the original source of everything. The universe is one of the material creations, but Narayan is transcendental to such material paraphernalia. It's a long purport. Should we continue?
That's good.
Yes, I will just jump over a passage where Srila Prabhupada establishes the authoritative line of acharyas who bring this knowledge down, and I will read the end of the purport. The bewilderment regarding Sri Krishna is due to the action of his twofold internal and external energies upon the third one called marginal energy. The living entities are expansions of his marginal energy, and thus they are sometimes bewildered by the internal energy and sometimes by the external energy. By internal energetic bewilderment, Sri Krishna expands himself into unlimited numbers of Narayanas and exchanges or accepts transcendental loving service from the living entities in the transcendental world. So we are under the influence of the internal energy, then we are in the transcendental spiritual world, rendering service. And by his external energetic expansions, he incarnates himself in the material world amongst the men, animals, or demigods to re-establish his forgotten relation with the living entities in different species of life. Great authorities like Bhishma, however, escape his bewilderment by the mercy of the Lord. So, therefore, he could say this on his death. At that time, not so many people accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They were bewildered because the Lord wanted to bewilder them, and they thought he's one of us. Now, in another part of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada compares the bewilderment of the ordinary people to fishes who see the reflection of the moon amongst them, and they think, wow, such a good, effulgent, brilliant fish, without knowing that the moon is not part of their little watery world, but is a planet, even a higher planet, in a total different category of reality, if you so want. So many people were like fishes, mistaking Krishna to be one of them. But Bhishma was not bewildered by the external energy. Therefore he said, let us hear it again. This Sri Krishna, don't know if he pointed at Krishna, it's a little impolite to point at people, but he really wanted to make sure, look, he's here. This Sri Krishna is no other than the inconceivable original personality of Godhead. He is the first Narayan, the supreme enjoyer, but he is moving amongst the descendants of King Vrishni, just like one of us. And he's bewildering us with his self-created energy. Please say the phrase. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishaya Bhutale Srimade Vati Vedanta Swami Nityanandine Namaste Sarasvatine Gaura Vani Prasarine Nirvana.
shunyavadi vashyayare shatarine
jaya
shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shri vasadi gaura bhaktavinda
hare
krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare hare
the pandavas enter listen to Bhishma and they looked at the personality who had visited them very often in the palace, who stayed with them, who also was Arjuna's charioteer. And when they heard that this person whom they loved with all their hearts was now glorified by Lord, by Grandfather Bhishma as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, You can imagine how glad they were, how much they were ecstatic. They felt, we always have a direct appointment with Krishna. Now we are in a different age, not age, but different time. And I want to ask you a question. Do you think it is possible for you to have a direct appointment with Krishna? This is something very, very high. I mean, will it, is it possible for you to have a direct appointment with the President of the United States? It's very difficult to meet Obama. Ooh. Even to go in the embassy, you have to three heavy guarded security controls. You have to watch a speaker. I mean, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, there's a photo of him meeting and talking to Obama. Do you know, want to know what he said to Obama? He said, "Mr. President, I very much appreciate the work which you do in your responsible position." Obama melted. Because normally everyone criticizes the president. What about your promise to give money to this cause and so on? But he said, "I very much appreciate the service you do in this responsible position." But yes, he had an appointment, and an interesting story how he got the appointment with the president. But it was very difficult. It was only possible through some backdoor, really. Someone who had a lot of money, and Obama needed to see him because money is important, especially. I mean, it's very important for politicians. Somehow he was, but normally, forget it. It's not possible. So, is it possible for you to, for an ordinary person, to have a direct appointment with Krishna? It's very difficult to have this, to even think about it. I know in our temple lectures, we very quickly are there with positive answers, but have you thought about it? Direct appointment with God? Ooh, you are demanding something very high. If already it's difficult for the president of this world.
Of the world?
Of the world, yes. No, Americans are this. He's not the president of the world. I beg to think. That they are the universal polis, but there are people who strongly have thought about this, and okay, I better don't say anything, otherwise I don't get a visa. So good. We are speaking about high subjects, searching out the will of Krishna. It's a very high subject. It is, you can easily know it if you somehow have an appointment with him. Maybe you can ask, or if you can be close, but it's very, very difficult. Great saints and sages have tried in vain. There was once trouble in the universe. A lot of trouble. What had happened? The demon Hiranyakashipu had seized control of all the important positions in the universe. That's what the Nazis did in Germany when they took over. They just walked into the important radio station police, and they began to take over the country by going to the, almost we call it mama points in Ayurveda, the points from where influence is done. And Hiranyakashipu, after prolonged time of severe austerities, had received the power where he could control the universe, and he had driven out the powerful controllers, the devatas, from their positions. He was so bad, but at the same time so influential, that he just would need to raise his eyebrows, and everyone was knowing, oh my God, he's angry, and he will start to kill now. He was so influential that it is described the oceans brought forth their wealth in the form of ratnas, jewels, and pearls, and brought it to his lotus feet. Not lotus feet, stinking. I don't think his feet smelled very bad because he was highly cultured also. So it would be unfair to make a bad comment about his feet. But he was so extremely powerful that it looked very, very gloomy. Gloomy means dark in the universe. He was terrorizing like anything. If you ever heard descriptions about terror, multiply it by a billion times and you have Hiranyakashipu. So the devatas, who were all devotees of Krishna, were put in an impossible situation. They could not do their yagyas. They had to go into hiding. And finally, when there was no other way for them to even think of their future, they prayed to the Lord to help. I think we are also sometimes like the devatas. We know Krishna is there. At least in the lecture, we believe that. When there are troubles, we turn to everything and everyone else than Krishna. He is last on our checklist when it comes. You can check your devotion by a simple paradigm, a simple measurement. Is where do you take shelter in times of trouble and good times also? Where, especially in troubles, and in happiness also, we are notorious means berüchtigt, for turning for other shelters, Anya Ashrayas in Krishna. Our bhakti is often very head bhakti. It has not gone deeper than a concept, which doesn't serve us in real life, really. To take shelter in Krishna is an expression of a deep abiding faith that he is more real than anything else and anyone else. We were talking yesterday about this when Anatoly realized it. Quite late, but he realized it. So they prayed, and as they prayed, something happened. All of a sudden, a voice began to speak to them. A voice as deep as the rumble of clouds. It was the Lord himself who spoke in a voice as great as the sound of a cloud. And he encouraged the devatas and drove away all fears. And he told them something which I feel is Bhagavatam in practice. That's something which is also very important for you. The Lord did not appear in person because the devatas were mixed devotees. They were not unalloyed devotees. But he vibrated to them in a voice, very powerful voice, very loud, but also very deep. They were glued to what the Lord said. Do you want to know what they told him and how it is a recipe to overcome all problems in life? Because they had problems. Ooh.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj always wants to come to We are talking here. Anyway, so Slujaya. O best of learned persons, do not fear. Just that they heard this. No fear. Svishi Viti O Redu. I wish all good fortune to you. My advice is, you all become my devotees, the Lord said to them, by hearing and chanting about me and offering me prayers. For these, means hearing, chanting, and prayers, if you do this, this will certainly, this is certainly meant to award benedictions to all living entities. I know all about the activities of Hiranyakashipu. I know. Yes, now. And I shall surely stop these activities very soon. Please wait patiently until that time. Let us go one level deeper and look at the Sanskrit course. The Lord is in effect saying that if you hear and chant and offer me prayers, you will get benediction. And what is the benediction which you will get? He said, I will soon appear and you will see me. Please wait patiently until that time. The Sanskrit word here is Mat Darshanam. Mat Darshanam means Mat direct perception will come by these activities. Patiently wait. Have patience in this. Hear, chant, and offer me prayers, and you will see me right before your eyes. And the Lord, did he just say this? Some pep talk? No, he appeared. Do you know from where he appeared? A pillar. He broke out of a mighty, mighty pillar. On the face of the pillar, there were all the enemies of Hiranyakashipu. He had engraved in that granite pillar all the faces of the enemies he had defeated. He forgot only one face, which he did not even know. It was the face of Narasingha Deva. From that faith pillar, the success pillar of Hiranyakashipu's terrorizing regime, Lord Narasingha broke out with a sound which was deafening. It was so loud. He roared. Almost finished. I know that Muhammad Ali would go in the ring, he would call, he would just shout at his enemy that the enemy would tremble already. He finished without anything. He was not a shaker. This is a technique, you know. when you fight, first scream. I would know this, and I would win every fight just by, because I have a loud voice. Weak muscles, but loud voice. We have today a person who has won many, many prizes in Ultimate Fighter. Ultimate Fighter is amongst us. Today I have seen him. Very gold medal Ultimate Fighter is amongst us. My tip for you is, before you go into the ring, just scream Narasingha Deva. That is very, very good method. So, the point here is, direct appointment with Krishna is, according to the words of the Lord, possible if you hear and chant and offer prayers. By performing kirtan, you actually will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally. Prabhupada speaks about this in the Prabhupada. Glorification of Krishna is called kirtan. You know everything. Performing kirtan and hearing the vibration of the sound Hare Krishna is actually seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. Hare Krishna. So you are invited to have an appointment with Krishna. Will you go or will you stay? When you think, Prabhus and Madhus, you can't miss such a chance to have an appointment with Krishna. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says what an appointment with Krishna means. He says, you, Krishna, are the expert doctor who can cure the illness of samsara, the repeated birth of death. When you have a doctor appointment and you are suffering, you will make sure one devotee is sleeping behind you, Amara. This is important for you. Please listen to this. It's about an appointment. So, water, you want to drink water for refreshment. Now you're shy. No need to be shy. It's natural to fall asleep when it's a little boring. But now you must listen. An appointment with Krishna, you cannot miss that. You only will miss an appointment with a doctor when you think you have no problem. In India, I had developed a big problem, a hernia, where my inside was coming out, and it looked as big as a football when it came out. I was almost thinking, maybe I lose my stomach in the streets of Vrindavan, you know. And I got, by some very nice contact, a friend of ours, who is working in a hospital, that friend recommended me to this German specialist of hernias surgery, Professor Köckeling. Those who are of the medical profession, they will tremble with awe and reverence when they hear the name Professor Köckeling. He is the main expert of Germany. I think also beyond the borders. He is the leader of the German Hernia Center. I got to see him, and then he gave me an appointment. He has very little time, very little time. The whole world. I saw these people from Dubai, from Kuwait, you know, the sheikhs. They're all standing in line before his door. They had hernia problems, you know. And I got an appointment with Professor Kirkley. You can only dream about this. And then I got the be there at 11 o'clock. I said, 11 o'clock. I will be, just to be sure, I will be 10 minutes earlier there. I always come late, but this appointment I cannot miss. It's the one appointment, because I have a problem. I really was suffering from the problem. My dear devotees, you have not yet realized that you have a problem. That's why when you chant, it looks as if you are somewhere else, not present. You're not showing up in your appointment. Yes, you sit there, you turn the beads, but your mind, you're not there. I don't want to say anything more, because otherwise I will never be invited again. Krishna is the expert doctor who can cure a disease, but Professor Kirkling has no idea that it is curable. It's death, and the repeated birth and death. That's what the Lord can. And you cannot miss that appointment. If you miss that appointment, it can only mean two things. That you are not aware that you have a problem, you're just not noticing it, that there is death and then again birth. You have not thought about this. And the other reason why you don't show up for this appointment is, in the verse of the Bhagavatam, there must be some curse over you, and so on, because only those who are killers of their own souls, they don't have this appreciation of Krishna. Real chanting, when you have a real, if you really come to the appointment of chanting, you will say one day, you have to be a little patient according to this verse, like Narada Muni. You know what Narada Muni's experience of chanting is? You want to hear what he feels when he chants? He says, Krishna appears at once on the seat of my heart as if called for. As soon as I begin to chant his holy activities, Krishna immediately is there. This, of course, is a pure devotee who chants Shuddha Naam. It's something which is possible only after the heart is purified and free from all anattas and offenses and so on. But it is possible that the one who is unseen by the eyes, you know, therefore he didn't appear to the demigods, becomes person personified in sound is there. Krishna's name is Navalingam Alingam. No? He's Alingam, he has no form, but Navalingam, he takes the form of sound. No, that's how he comes into the world. I have to end here, but I want to bring one thing more. As we all know, we are trying to chant. And in fact, here in Croatia, I mean, from the way you engage in kirtan, you are really wonderful chanters. Oh, Marsh, they are nicely responding, no? I always exaggerate. Maharaj always talks. We are two poles, which in terms of exaggerating and telling, we are not two poles in other ways. But I always go, "Neum," and he goes. Yes, so something is there, you can say. Something is there. But I'm serious. Here, I don't want to criticize you. I really have observed you're nicely participating in the kirtan. In the beginning, you're usually a little stiff, but then if your neighbor dances, you are not afraid that he talks bad about you, then you also dance. I have seen. It's a group thing. But it is chanting and dancing. It is something. But there are obstacles in our heart. The obstacles are the six enemies. They are not out there, they are in here. They are called ripus in Sanskrit. It's lust, it's anger, it's pochlepo, greed, illusia, lajna ya, zavest, that envy. Zavest, isn't it? Envy, yes. Ooh, a lot of envy. That is a problem in the heart. And when these enemies are there around our heart, the sound just doesn't really seem to penetrate and go through. There seems to be a wall around us. At least the powerful spiritual sound. You may hear the sound vibration, but because from this anger and greed and illusion, so much offenses are created, it's that the sound just doesn't come through, just like the light of the sun doesn't come through when there are clouds and fog. We are still a little bit covered. There is one very nice method which you can apply, which will help you that these enemies will die one after another. Something which I have become aware of by the kindness of Burijan Prabhu, who has strongly preached to me, strongly. He said, "Maharaj, you are a holy name man, but you're missing something in your spiritual practice." And I thought, please tell them. You have to work on your faith in regards to the Bhagavatam. Because if you regularly read in the Bhagavatam, Krishna will make his appearance. And do you know that the Bhagavatam says the recitation of the Bhagavatam is our very means of
conquest.
Do you know what is conquest? Povida. It's a povida. Conquest means when there is two forces fighting, then one will win by a conquest, military conquest. Bhagavata. By reading regularly the verses of the Bhagavatam, Tato Jayam, Jai means victory, Odirayet is achieved. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, we should all call out with raised hands, acknowledging Krishna's presence in the Bhagavatam, who will conquer our six enemies. He says we should raise our hands and call out very loud, Jai Shri Krishna!
Jai Shri Krishna!
That was a little loud. Jai Shri Krishna!
Jai Shri Krishna!
It's a conquest which happens. Who of you reads regularly in the Bhagavatam? I have eyes which discover lies very quickly. No need to raise hands because it's embarrassing for some of us. You are not reading the Bhagavatam. If you would start a regular practice of reading Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita also, but Bhagavatam, especially Bhagavatam, you would see that Krishna would come to the shore of your consciousness and conquer it. You know, when the Nazis had conquered Europe, they had taken the French territory, and at that time they could only be gotten by one strategy, that is, ships with soldiers had to land on the French coast. And the Germans knew, we have to win this war. The war will be decided on the sand of the French beach. And they were really giving a resistance. But the Americans came, and they came more and more. They had good strategy. And finally, they could land on the beach of Normandy, and from there they could drive back the Germans and defeat them. But the first important strategical gain was to win the coast, because then they could bring in more and more army, more and more weapons, more and more this and that and so on. And then, so our heart is conquered by the Germans. Lust, anger, greed, delusion, pride, and envy. They're there, very strongly there. And they will fight against. But if you hear regularly, every day in the Bhagavatam, the Lord will land on the shore of your consciousness, and he will drive out your ripus, your enemies, and you will see, why am I all of a sudden so Krishna conscious? Why is my heart so light? Why can I chant Hare Krishna very nicely? I can hear everything. It arrives and it enters my heart. What has happened? What has happened is very easy. The Bhagavatam has happened. When Bhagavatam happens, the Lord rises in the horizon of your heart, and he will conquer the different enemies. And all your shoka, your lamentation, all your bhaya, means your fear, and all your moha, your illusions, will go. No problem. Regularly you should hear Bhagavatam. Make a regular time. I beg you, I implore you, this is the last thing I can say to you because my time is up. Please don't miss your appointment with Krishna. This is the Lord personally saying, not me, I am saying, Lord personally says to the devatas, when they were really in trouble and there was really terror in the universe and in their heart also, they could only think of this demon Hiranyakashipu and what he would do next. Then the Lord came and said, you must chant, you must hear, you must pray, and then you will get Madarshanam, my darshan, and so on. This is very, you can't miss this appointment. Do you have a problem? Yeah, we will die. We are not at the level of Krishna consciousness in most cases, or many cases, where we would like to be. No? We are still a little bit under the control of material nature, or very much. This is a problem. Go to the good doctor who cures you, and you can meet him in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Don't miss this direct appointment. Hare Krishna.
I think it's time to stand up and stretch, isn't it? And we could open one of the windows on the opposite side from myself. Can someone open the windows? Can we open more windows, please? Okay. Stretch, stretch, stretch. We can do all sorts of stretching exercises. Get the blood flowing back in the brain. Okay, if we could take our seats for a few more minutes. I would put it this way. What I want to do is perhaps add some footnotes to Maharaj's message, rather than, you know, sort of going off on something else. And I'm very much aware of the time. In fact, I want to keep.
We have to Sunday.
We have Sunday. Everybody has to do it. Okay, but if everyone will want Dolucha. Anyway, okay. We'll see what happens. So, momentarily, back to the verse. It has the word Gudha in it. Gudha. Such a nice word. It's related to the verbal root Guh. Guh. Ga-u-ha. Guh. Which means to hide or to be hidden. And this theme comes in this topic of searching out the Lord, is the sense of the Lord being hidden. And this was, if we touch on the account of Hiranyakashipu and Nrisimhadeva appearing, in one sense, the whole problem was that the Lord had entered into the heart of Hiranyakashipu, and he was hiding there. All the time that Hiranyakashipu was doing his terroristic acts, the Lord was present in his heart. But he was so deeply hidden in the heart that Hiranyakashipu could not take direction from him. However, Hiranyakashipu, we can say, was always searching for the Lord. All his questions to Prahlad were really, he didn't know it himself, but they were really questions about where is the Lord? How can I see the Lord? Where is the Lord? And of course, the nature of the demonic mentality is that the demon wants to be defeated. That's why he or she makes so much trouble, because the demon is looking for his equal match. And when he meets the match, just like Hiranyaksha, he was looking for a good fight. He finally found a good fight in Varahadev. And so he could be defeated. So, And of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, etc. Rajaguhyam. Krishna says that this knowledge is the king of secrets. Let's think about secrets for a moment. Do you have any secrets? Yeah? You want to tell me some of your secrets? No. Why do we have secrets? What sort of secrets do we have? Silence. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita about secrets other than what I just said? Of secrets I am silence. So when we confront a secret, together with the secret, there is silence. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a secret. Someone told me recently, I'm going to tell you a secret. But then it's not going to be a secret anymore. A large part of why we have secrets is because of our conditioned state, we are embarrassed. The soul, Prabhupada said, is embarrassed to be in this material body. And most of what we have secrets about have to do with the actions or perhaps the inactions of our bodies and our minds in this world. We know that somehow what we do, what we have done, isn't proper. Isn't proper, what does that mean? Is somehow not liberating, it's not giving us Krishna. Okay, Krishna is hiding in the heart. And there are secrets, but the word guhyam can have another sense, and that is a mystery. One French philosopher, 20th century, Gabriel Marcel, made a distinction between puzzles, problems, and mysteries. Puzzles, you can solve. Problems, you can also solve. It may take help from someone else to solve. Mystery, you cannot solve. The more you go into mystery, the deeper it gets. Our hearts were generally functioning on the surface of our hearts. And we tend to perceive others in terms of the surface of their hearts. But spiritual life is about going deeper. Yesterday, we discussed a little bit yesterday evening about sadhus. And what does Krishna say about sadhus in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam? Anyone know? Very good, yes. Sadhu hridayam mahyam sadhunam hridayam tvaham. Madanya te na jana ti na hante yo manandapiti. It's a paradox. Sadhavaha, the sadhus. Pridayam mahyam, they are in my heart, says Krishna. Sadhunam, pridayam tu aham, but tu. Among the sadhus, of the sadhus, sadhunam, pridayam tu aham. I am in the heart of the sadhus are in my heart. Simultaneously. How does that work? Wait a minute. If somebody is someplace, how can, if somebody is with some, anyway, it gets bewildering. But then Krishna says, mat anyate na janati naham tebyo manandapi. Mat anyate na janati. The devotees don't know anyone else than the sadhus. And I don't know anyone else. What did I just say? Both ways. The sadhus know no one but me, and I know no one but the sadhus. Very exclusive. But the essential point here is that the Lord is in the heart, and Hiranyakashipu couldn't find him until he got help from whom? Prahlad. In effect, who is Prahlad? Prahlad is... He's a sadhu. He's also, you can say, Hiranyakashipu's guru. But that's another subject. He's sadhu. And he is revealing to Hiranyakashipu the Lord. There was one professor, the late Joseph O'Connell. He was a scholar of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He studied Gaudiya Vaishnavism for 35, 40 years of his life. He read and spoke fluent Bengali. He knew the Chaitanya Charitamrita backwards and forwards. He knew all of our literature very well. Now, at this point, what would usually happen in a Bhagavatam lecture is that the person speaking would, you know, sort of smash the scholar and say, but he wasn't a devotee, or something like that. That's not what I want to say. At which point somebody who's watching on the internet perhaps will say, ha ha, now we've got him. He's going to glorify this professor. But we know in Bhagavatam it says, yes, yes, hi bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvairva naistatra samasate harava bhaktas yoga. Harama bhaktas yukato, etc. That the devotees have all good qualities and the non-devotees have no good qualities. Well, I'm not going to get into that discussion right now, but my point here is that I learned something from this professor. You want to hear what I learned?
Yes.
He had a very, I found, helpful insight about our tradition, about our culture of Krishna consciousness. And sometimes it's like that. Someone who is, quote, on the outside can see something that those on the inside won't notice. His observation's very simple. He said, what I find is that you have two forms of bhakti. He called one of them vertical bhakti and the other horizontal bhakti. Vertical bhakti is the bhakti in relation to the Lord. You worship the Lord. This means you are offering obeisance and you are looking up the Supreme Personality of Godhead and so on and so forth. Horizontal bhakti, he said, it's very prominent in your Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. And he was extremely appreciative of our tradition. He had his I saw him as a very pious person, very religious in his own religious tradition, but he very much admired, appreciated, otherwise he wouldn't have spent so much time studying. He said, there's so much horizontal bhakti in your tradition. This is so nice. Okay. Well, here's what I want to add as a sort of footnote to this discussion of searching out the Lord and studying the Bhagavatam. What is Prahlada Maharaj, what is one of his bits of advice? See, in English we don't have the word advices. Advice is plural. Anyway, what was his advice to his father? When his father asked him, so, my dear little boy, what have you learned in school today? He said, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Padasevanam Archanam Manam Sakyam, etc. And we know what the reaction of Hiranyakashipu was, because he couldn't accept his instructions. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. These are nine processes, procedures, practices by which we practice bhakti. Now, here's my suggestion. Suggestion is simply, if we apply this not only to our vertical bhakti, but also to our horizontal bhakti, this could be very interesting. It could be interesting for the development of our Krishna conscious culture. So, for example, Shravanam, hearing about devotees. Kirtanam, glorifying devotees. Oh, what about the next one? Vishnu Smaranam. Okay, we can't remember devotees. We can only remember Vishnu, because that's what it says in Shastra. Only remember Vishnu. But Vishnu is never alone. Speaking of remembering devotees, I was appreciating this morning. I read a little memory of Srila Prabhupada from His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami. Very interesting recollection that he had. Shall I share it with you?
Yes.
It was an initiation ceremony in the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. How many of you have been in the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan? Very many of you. So you remember the size of the courtyard. It's a good sized courtyard compared to so many other temples in Vrindavan. So this courtyard was completely packed with devotees. And Bhaktivikas Swami at that time was receiving second initiation. There were about 70 devotees receiving first or second initiation. And Akshayananda Swami was doing the yajna. And the yajna was going on. Swaha, 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 swaha. And at one point, Srila Prabhupada said, stop! That little child in the back is putting its hand in its mouth. This is contaminating this yajna. Take that child out, wash his hand, and tell him not to do that. Prabhupada, who in the same Krishna Balaram Mandir has said about so much ritual that was done for the installation of the deities. This is all very nice, but what really matters is chant Hare Krishna. But the point I want to make is he wasn't seeing that child as a child and therefore doesn't count, but rather he was seeing that two-year-old child in the lap of his mother as one of the participants in this yoga. He was seeing in that way. Isn't that nice? So, remembering the activities of the devotees, we can reflect on the activities of the devotees and how those activities reveal to us the Lord in the heart. Okay, we can go on with all the different of the nine activities and how we can do them in relation to the devotees. My message is let's try it. Let's try it consciously as part of our sadhana. Let's be conscious that there is devotion in this realm of devotees. Devotion to devotees. Is that a good idea?
Yes. Sure.
Okay. Now, I want to end just by... really, I want to say now it's time that we open it up. We always say we're going to have more discussion and then we go on talking in one direction and so on. But I want to suggest a possible theme, but and you can take it or not take it as a theme of discussion. There is a practice that's done, I don't know, in the business world or something. They call it backcasting. There's forecasting, like you forecast the weather. Is it going to rain? When is it going to rain? And so on. That's forecasting. And then there's backcasting. Backcasting means you take some point in time in the future and you imagine how you would like things to be at that time in the future. And then you work backwards from that point. Let's say, what should we say? 5 years from now? 10 years from now? Let's say 10 years from now. So the Hare Krishna movement in Zagreb, 10 years from now. How would we like it to look? How would we like it to be? How would we like to feel in the Hare Krishna movement in relation to, as part of, and so on? And then we can work our way back to the present. You see what happens? If we think in this way, then we can start to do what they call connecting the dots. So if we would see, yes, it would be so nice to have such a Krishna consciousness movement 10 years from now. Because our tendency at the present is to look at what's not there. Okay, so maybe this or that or the other thing is not there, but then again, that's another discussion. So we can do this back casting. So that would be one idea that we might discuss. But that's just an idle suggestion. So I will stop here and invite you to join in the conversation. Thank you so much.
I have one question I can ask His Holiness Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj. You said that
maybe I just come back
I will just come back.
Yes.
No. Because it's for him.
You said at one moment that we are embarrassed of our material life as a soul, and that's why we keep secrets. And we see that nobody likes the witness of our bad deeds. So the Hiranyakashipu didn't like Prahlad as a witness of his bad deeds also.
Witness
of the bad deeds.
Yeah.
So my question is, it seems even in our lives, if we are witness of some bad deeds, it's better that we are like Prahlad, so advanced. Otherwise, we might also be in trouble.
I think I almost got this, but...
Seems like if we as a... let me say, if I as a beginner devotee become a witness of a bad deed, it's better I become advanced as fast as possible, because
to be like Prahlad.
To be like Prahlad, because yeah. Who knows what will happen.
Yes, so this is a comment.
So this is a question. Is it like this or how?
Okay. We've witnessed something. You're using the word bad, and this may be an appropriate word. And you're suggesting, is it right that this should be an impetus for me to become more advanced so that I can view, if I'm going to be a witness of something bad, I would be in a similar mood as Prahlad. Is that it?
Yeah. It's in a sense that because whenever you are a witness of something that is happening and people don't want to see, others to see, and then they will get on your case, like Hiranyakashipu got on Prahlad's case.
Yeah.
So it's very important that Prahlad is so highly connected with Krishna.
Yeah.
So how is it with us? We are not so, but with me, I'm not so connected with Krishna. At the same time, go to the troubles, not as big as Prahlad, but in some cases.
Okay, so you're saying you, in effect, become a target for the person who is now aware that you have been witness to something that they don't want to be known.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you're right. The conclusion, in a sense, is this has to be an impetus for ourselves to become more advanced. You witness something that someone wants to not be known. In a general principle is if, okay, let's put it this way. In one sense, that was an unwilling sharing of a secret. Somehow or other, you become a witness of someone else's behavior, which they are concerned to keep secret from others, but now they've shared it with you.
Yeah.
Unintentionally. And so the general principle when someone shares shares a secret with us is that we don't share it with another, right? We keep it for ourselves. And sometimes this is difficult for us, especially somehow in Vaishnava society, we tend to, I don't know what it is, but somehow we have the sense that we shouldn't have any secrets, therefore I won't keep any secrets. If you tell me something, I will broadcast it to the world, especially on the internet. And what happens with this, of course, is a breakdown in the whole system of trust and trustworthiness. We talked a little about that last time. So I would say that here the issue is one of trust or lack of trust. And if you witness something and the person now may persecute you for that, it seems to me that the need of the day would be for that person to recover their trust in you. Because something is what's broken, and they always say about trust that it's like china, like porcelain, you know, you break a plate. It's very difficult to, you can repair it, you can glue, but there's going to be a line in the plate. It can be very difficult. It's not impossible though. And I would say this is in the category of what Krishna tells Arjuna in sixth chapter about controlling the mind, when he agrees with Arjuna, yes, it's difficult to control the mind. No doubt it's difficult, but it's possible. How? By practice, by detachment. Something like that, in a parallel sense, it is possible. We need to have that hope and that conviction. It is possible to rebuild, to recover, to repair when trust has cracked. It is possible. If we say it's impossible, if we say there's no hope, that has certain consequences which, as Vaishnavas, we really don't want to have to consider. I would put it like this. Does that get at your issue somehow?
There is this phenomenon that even if you are an intentional witness of something, that others doesn't want to be revealed, they get on your case. And then if you're not advanced enough to cope with this, then you're in trouble also. And you just stuck, you're just there. Mm-hmm. So how to cope with this? You just don't say about anything, just a witness, and you just immediately feel, you immediately feel, no. Now, there's this phenomenon. Now, then someone will get on my case. Because
I'll say something briefly, but then perhaps commitments on Maharaj wants to also respond.
Just say, the example. For instance, five young people were just doing little show how they can do whatever they want. They enter the shop, and one of them stays outside, and four of them make a joke with the shopkeeper. And the shopkeeper has a gun. He's afraid that they will steal something, and somehow they struggle. Shopkeeper dies, and the one that was outside, they didn't go inside, didn't do anything, all of four get on his case. Now he's the witness of what they did. And they want him to be the part of
their conspiracy.
But he said, I was not inside, you know. And then he's, in a sense, in a trouble. That's maybe that depicts the situation.
Okay.
So how to help this person, which was just a witness,
yeah,
and at the same time he was there, but he didn't do the things inside. He was just outside. He didn't want to go inside.
Okay, but in your example, he actually is part of the conspiracy. Because he was part of the group. And why was he standing outside? He wasn't just going somewhere else and doing something else. He was standing outside to watch, you know, that nobody else comes in or whatever. So he's part of the conspiracy.
It's more he like this. He didn't want to go inside. No, we don't do this. But he stays outside. But then something happens, and the guy is dead. And then he found out the guy is dead, and everyone runs, and he runs also. And later he finds out that they were inside. He's dead.
Now it's getting complicated. Well, let's get back. I'll just say briefly, in the context of Krishna consciousness, how do we look at it if I'm the guy standing outside who wasn't inside and now everyone's after me and I'm trying to advance in spiritual life? I recognize that this is no accident, that these accusation or this trouble that now my companions are giving me, that's also sent by Krishna. This is all part of Krishna's arrangement. I am also I would stick with this point. I'm somehow implicated. I'm somehow involved. We have a saying in English, it takes two to tango. Not tango, but tango. Tango is an Argentinian style of dance. It's not a devotional type of dance. But it takes two to tango. That means, two people are in some sort of conflict, and one of them is saying the other one, it's all his fault. He started it, right? Little boys. Me and myself and my older brother, when we were this, it was always his fault. It was actually always his fault. But, somehow we are implicated. Krishna has us in that situation for some reason, and it means we need to deal with it. If we don't deal with it in this situation, Krishna's going to send the same story to us another time. And that's why, as devotees, we want to really, really, think deeply how to resolve conflicts.
It's a very subtle question, and I believe you really hit the nail on the head, so to say, or you touched the essence. I remember in the old times in Germany, we did our leadership was a little adventurous. Hansu Dutta was his name, and he was later this adventurous nature, which already he had in Germany, was in the States, leading to things which were even not always 100% legal. I did become a part of things which were a little bit shady, at the border, let us say, at the border. I was a translator, I was a good boy from a good background. But just by being together with this leader, I came to situations. One situation in particular, which was very much the one which you wanted to describe with your example. And I could say, well, I'm the good boy, I'm the pious from a good family, and this was all the leader's thing. I happened to be a member of the Hare Krishna movement at that time, where there was a leader who was maybe not doing everything 100% correct according to the law. So what do I have to do with the consequences? But I learned from a different perspective. I mean, you helped me very much, Maharaj, by what you said.
why was I in the first place in this situation? Why did I come in this? And what was my lesson to learn? My lesson to learn was clearly, and I see that in old age more and more, I have to be a little bit careful to not be part of something which is not good. I have to learn that. And my conscience will tell me if I have gone a few times through these lessons, borderline lessons. No. Now, here it's already a little bit over the edge, so to say. It's just a little bit too much of something. Let me reflect on the situations through which I learned in the past, and let me take the lesson to when there is something which my conscience cannot agree with, to say, I think we do a little mistake, we should go a little bit in a different way. That is, I feel what you, the lessons, I think which, see, life is a teacher. What happens in life is there for a good pedagogical reason. We are meant to learn, and therefore we find ourselves in such situation where you say, but I did not vote for that. I did not. This is not my idea. But you're connected the next time. Don't be so close, you know, and say something. This is how we grow in our life, by the great teacher called life.
I think you wanted to express
this. Yes,
that's nice. Speaking of it, I mean, this is a very interesting subject of implications and involvement. I mean, what you mentioned about early days in Germany took me back to what I was implicated in. We won't go into that.
Embarrassing.
It's embarrassing. But one example which I found helpful for myself with respect to the society of devotees, I've shared this with Maharaj, with some others. Analogies always have their limitations, but I find it helpful. I've used the expression in the last two or three lectures, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. In Hungarian, you had something. Okay. Anyway, this is a little analogy. Again, it may not fit entirely, but I share it with you as something you might think about, you might feel, find helpful, because you might find yourself sometimes not agreeing with something that's been decided. Right? No. No, I always agree with everything, no matter what. No. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. Who wants to? I think such an energy. You can take the next question.
Let it see.
Playing a mood.
Maybe on.
Friend who were totally different natures and who were trying to serve and had the common goal, similar to serve Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and everything. And I really wanted, this was part, I think this is really a big part of the answer, but I want to do it really practically. When two persons have same goal, they want to please Krishna, they want to please Prabhupada, but they have different natures, they have different ideas. They find their shlokas, like you mentioned, they find their followers, they find their, even their authorities, and they find their whole way how is the best to serve. What to practically do in that condition?
There must be obviously a type of system which decides
do we go left or do we go right now? And for this, I want to repeat what Maharaj said. For this, Prabhupada had put the GBC body there, who makes decisions. And the two devotees who say, "We want to serve Krishna by going left," and the other says, "We want to serve Krishna by going right on in the street situation." And if both cannot be done at one moment, then there must be a higher body who says, "Well, in this case, we all have to go right." And although the group which wanted to go left will say, "We don't agree for the reason of unity, we have to come to some agreement." Now, when we doubt, when we say, "Well, we can't both be done, we go right and we go left," then the GBC may say, "No, only one way can now in this situation be done." And there's always a possibility to ask again and appeal to the body, and the body will think again about it, and then will think about this most difficult challenge in management, that is to create unity and diversity. But there has to be a system over it, otherwise you have anarchy, and it doesn't work. Some say, maybe some of you were studying anarchistic philosophy. I was, and I believe in it. And they give the example, no, it works very nice. And look at the ants. They all somehow do what they want to do, and then they build a pile, and it works very nice. But science has shown that even the ants, there is some collective intelligence somehow working, there is some system, in other words, which informs the ants. So although it looks that they are all that there is no ant government anywhere, there is something in a natural order, a natural system. In the Vedic way, I dealt with this argument and in terms of Paramatma, you know. Anyways, this is my answer, and a well thought of answer. Without a GBC body, my dear devotees, there would not be these amazing successes of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the West. And we know there are other Gaudiya movements, but because they lack a unified organizing brain, so to say, they have great difficulties in establishing temples, running temples, organizing a huge book printing thing, you know, which really reaches out to the conditioned souls and so on. Now, I again want to say, sometimes our GBC management was very much challenged by Prabhupada. It's a challenge Prabhupada put before them. You have to create unity in diversity. That means different programs can exist simultaneously. It's sometimes difficult, really difficult, from a management position. And it is a challenge. And maybe one decision is not nobody can always be 100% perfect, you know. But two things need to be done. You need to follow this, because without it, everything breaks into pieces. And you need to appeal in Vaishnava ways
and see that maybe my viewpoint is not, isn't there a way that it can exist parallel, and then the GBC body will certainly look into it. I know. Premamurti, your question, of course, is, we all know the situation in Asia, and it's an elephant in the room. Everyone can see it, it's right before the eyes. But I really want to say here that this was also there during Prabhupada's time. There were devotees and programs who, it was not so easy to integrate them. That was there in the Prabhupada's time. And he requested us always that that stay in the structure and let us solve it in this structure. Because once you get out of the structure, everything is possible, anyone will say anything, and so on. I remember this was a very hard pill for me to swallow, who came from an anarchistic background. That was not the last station I had before Krishna consciousness. It was sometime then I understood it could not work, and I left anarchism, and later I became a devotee. I have to say this, because otherwise someone would say, you were an anarchist before you joined, you have not changed. I have changed before I joined. I was but still there was something on my individual nature, and we had a temple president who was very different at one stage. We had also other temple presidents who were like me. I remember at that time a devotee, I was the older devotee. I could have gone over the temple president because I had a lot of, old devotees. But one devotee begged me, and I really took this. Don't now you feel hurt, you feel, or not, it's not your way, but please let us solve it within Srila Prabhupada's structure. For now, please follow that your temple president, and then within that we can see it. And later it was done, so yes, I was given a program within ISKCON, but it was not under the direct supervision of the temple president. It was called the network preaching. Network preaching means a net of Namhata centers. It was very successful and very, very nice. But for the moment, to not have quarrels. What will the devotees think if there are quarrels between leaders? They will lose their faith. That's the experience of it. So I had to swallow that pill, and I swallowed it, and I understand it even now. I cannot forget this. And that's what is behind our Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj's. He speaks as a professor. He appeals to our intelligence. We have to follow and think really. And that's what our situation is. Swami, sometimes there are decisions, and I can tell you, sometimes it's so close that 50% in ISKCON agrees to the decisions, 50 don't agree. It's sometimes so close, but we know. We have to work it out within the system and not go beyond the system, because otherwise there's war and no one has faith. The worst thing you can do in Krishna consciousness is to destroy the faith of the devotees. That's the worst thing you can do, because that's all they have on their journey back home back to Godhead. If that is destroyed, then they cannot move forward. So we have to keep in mind, so deal in such a way.
Yeah. Can I add something?
Please do.
To this issue of two let's say, two devotees disagreeing or having different perspectives, sometimes the different perspectives are due to a sense that one perspective will be, we need to think inside the box, because the box is what we've been given, the organization. We need to, you know, work and so on and so forth. And the other person says, but this is a preaching movement, and preaching means being entrepreneurial, you know that word? Being adventuresome in business. Yeah. And so we really need to think outside the box if our movement is going to really be successful. And so it goes back and forth, inside the box, outside the box. And then what have you created? A false dichotomy. You know this expression?
It's a false problem, maybe.
A false dichotomy. A dichotomy is either or. It's either this or it's that. And then on both sides, everyone starts to think it's either this or it's that. It can't be both. There's no space. There's no gray area. There's only white and there's only black. I could get into a bit of a rant on this. Years ago, there was big controversy whether or not we offer a peacock feather to Lord Chaitanya. It became a huge controversy. And some were saying yes, and others were saying no. You offer yes. And the others said, no, you don't offer peacock. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes. And what I was trying to say was, how about sometimes we offer and sometimes not? What's the problem? Sometimes Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of being the Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he does his 21-hour, Bhava Prakash, Leela. He's very much in that mood. And other times he's very much in the mood of being the devotee of Krishna, and there's no question of, you know, he's in the mood of Radharani wearing a peacock feather? Maybe not. So, why not both? But no, in our, somehow much of the dynamic, and it gets accelerated and sharpened, especially on the internet. Yeah, there was a whole debate once, I remember, some years ago, about whether you could eat peanuts on a Ekadashi or not. Yes! No! Yes! No! Yes, we have the International Society for Peanuts Conference.
Can we eat or can we not? No!
Can we discuss that later? So my point is about this, you know, this expression, maybe you have this in Croatian, thinking outside the box, thinking. We had a conference at our center, our academic institute in Oxford, 2 or 3 years ago. The title of the conference was Thinking Inside the Box, and it was about Indian philosophy and the subject of different sorts of philosophical categories. It was a very creative. It was a title which was created by thinking outside the box. But anyway, so what I want to say is that sometimes these conflicts are what I see as a symptom of what one would call growing pains. When a small child. Ladies can tell us at what age usually the first teeth start coming in.
6 months.
Already after 6 months? Yeah. So soon. Yeah, because they want to start eating. And what happens? They're crying, right, because the teeth are coming in and it's painful. Similarly, the child becomes 12 years old, 13 years old, 14 years old, now a teenager, and the teenager is starting to see more and more faults with the parents. No, it doesn't happen in Croatia. So, and, you know, teenagers, what do? They rebel against the parents, right? Because it's part of growing up. Because they have to find a sense of their own identity. And I think this is something which we tend to repress in our society because we're not quite sure how to do it in a way which will be good for all of us as a society. And that is to find ourselves as individuals within the society. It's a process which each one of us has to work out. Each one of us has to. Anyway. And sometimes it seems to some devotees that this is entirely discouraged. No, you have your place, you have your duty. Don't think. That was not actually Prabhupada's program. I've heard devotees say, the whole morning program, it's so totally scripted. You come in, you have to offer obeisance, you have to sing this, you have to sing with this melody, and then again obeisance, and then round and around till here we go. And, you know, it's too scripted for me. I'm sorry, it's just, you know, it's I can't fit into that. So I think all of this is a challenge for us as a movement, a Krishna consciousness movement. How can we push the movement and pull devotees forward in their spiritual life and pull them forward and let them move forward, however, you know, not necessarily as card-carrying members of this particular society, ISKCON, but as devotees of Krishna. That's how I see the Krishna consciousness movement can really thrive, and we can be major agents in expanding the Krishna consciousness movement if we encourage everyone. Go to Krishna. Here's all the facilities, all the materials you need. Here are Srila Prabhupada's books. Here's so much guidance for you. And then they will do so many things with what they receive. And some of the things they will do we may not like so much. But that's not necessarily for us to determine. But if we try to determine everything in advance, everything has got to be, you know, within these parameters, I think we're actually in danger of missing the spirit of Lord Chaitanya's movement. Okay, sorry, I got on a bit of a rant.
Nice.
Does that make any sense?
Yes. 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 Yes.
Very much.
Nanda Maharaj, you explained yesterday. You explained yesterday about this longing which we should have for Krishna as a means to discover Krishna's plan for us. So, on our way of search for Krishna's plan, through this longing, we may find different opinions and scenarios, what may be Krishna's plan for me. And I feel every one of us in some point of life get different ideas, what can be Krishna's plan. Some of these plans may be result of our karma or what other people told us. Something what we feel in our heart. But what is actually, how do you make these distinctions? What is actually Krishna's plan for me? And once we find this plan, how we can get the strength and enthusiasm to follow Krishna's plan.
Thank you very much, Madhuchandra. I was very deeply thinking about this. And then I came to a purport. The Prabhupada explains the verse which describes what is bhakti. In this verse, we find that bhakti is to have three elements. It has to be directed to Krishna. You have to use your body, your mind, and your words in some kind of effort. And last and not least, you have to have a favorable intention. You want to please Krishna. This is Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti. Anyone who, bhakta is someone who is wanting to use his activities to please Krishna, really. So now the question is, how will he find out what really pleases Krishna? And in that purport to this verse, Prabhupada addresses this important question. He says, you have to go to a spiritual master. That's his answer to this question. And for me, as a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, it is like this. I have many ideas how to spread the movement for Krishna consciousness, but I need to see that my ideas are within the frame of what Prabhupada said. And by the way, that frame, Madhuchandra, is very, very big. Very big. So it's nice if you have an idea that you get some confirmation, yes, go ahead, from the devotees. It's called Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Sometimes you can ask your spiritual master, sometimes devotees, sadhus, and sometimes Shastra. Or in ideal forms, when it's all together. Otherwise it's very difficult to say what is Krishna's plan and what is your plan, isn't it? We will not have that certitude. However, Madhuchandraji, there are also ways in which Krishna communicates to his devotees in this world. Because this is a standard answer which I gave you, and I think you are very well aware, but sometimes one answer doesn't answer everything, or one perspective. There is also something from Krishna, a confirmation in the heart. You want to do something and you are not yet sure, should I do this, or is it my idea, is it pleasing to Krishna? But then you sometimes get an inspiration in the heart, yes, do this. You might have seen that, and Krishna speaks about this. He says, Savasya Chaham Shridhi Sannivishu. I am situated in the heart of all living beings, and from me come rememberings, knowledge, and forgetfulness. In other words, although we don't often speak about it, there are moments in our life where we have to trust on the inspiration which Paramatma gives us. That is the only navigation system for us at that time. We have to be serious. And the way, if you really want to know, is this Paramatma, is this the Lord, or is it my own? Just wait for some more confirmations. And when you have a few, then you know, okay, let's go. What I gave the first part of my answer, you have taken note of that, I believe. And the second part is, yes, trust in the Super Soul. trust in the Lord that He gives you ideas. There are such things. How do the wild goose know how to travel from Scandinavia to Africa? Wild goose, how do we say wild goose? Guska, the Guskas. How do the deeply Guskas, how do they know how to go from Scandinavia to Africa? Someone said very correctly, it's an inner GPS, you know. Who is behind it? Who is the voice of that? Is it it's not a computer voice, it's the Lord in the heart. That's how they know. And some, there are situations in life when you are maybe alone or you really think out of the box for some reason. Like you became a clown for Krishna. A very effective preacher in schools, a Madhu Chandra, who preaches to so many children, and they all have to chant Gauranga and see, he has a dress and he tells stories and he publishes stories. I think that in your case, you had a lot of inspiration in the heart to go this way. And then you asked some devotees, and you got some confirmation. But the initial thing to even think in this way, no one in Croatia did what you did before. You are a pioneer in this. And you had to follow a little bit the voice of the super soul who told you, go this way, your idea is good. The two types of answers. You know by asking the guru, and you know also sadhu, guru, sadhu, shastra, the three. And you know also by that certitude in the heart. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks a lot about this, this inner inspiration. It is important. Managers have sometimes trouble with this. And we can understand them. They have to hold everything together and so on. Therefore, we need to, when we act in a movement, you know, discuss things, how it is, can be practically done. But in your case, as a Grihastha, a lot is inspiration, what you do, and so on. Sometimes maybe you make a mistake because it was not Krishna, but it was your mind. And next time you will be a little bit more careful and not act so quickly. Good. Divya Prabandha, who was 50 years in India.
My question is for Guru Maharaj, Srila Krishna Chaitra. This is something which I think I'm resonating much of many of the senior, many of the devotees whom I talk recently. And actually it has a connection with the class and this scheme you spoke about sadhus. Regarding and in connection with Sadhuva Samantavya, that how to distinguish, where is the limit in doing some abominable activity and still being considered as a devotee or treated as a devotee? Like, for example, recently, I think many of the devotees here know about these cases of child abuse, which repeated and which actually have a tremendous strength to destroy faith. And some 15 years ago, so, and the first time this information, this secrets, actually, surfaced, that broke faith of many devotees. I also had great difficulty actually with swallowing this. And now this, how, I don't want to be sarcastic, but you know, how many devotees you have to kill or how many children you have to abuse to still be considered devotee? You know? Where is it? You know, Prabhupada, for example, in 1975, when the first reports came from these Dallas group, some children were beaten, abused. And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada was furious. For several days he was completely, he couldn't, he was very distant. And he said, they should be immediately hanged. They should be hanged.
Oh.
You know, these are our teachers. I mean, yeah. These are devotees. Yeah. It's about initiation. And this is such a nonsense. Such a horrible thing. The Prabhupada said they should be hanged. So, you know, very difficult for me to understand where is the limit. And then, yes. In that life, how to treat this in the world.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that nice question. Very pleasant. We sometimes call this the hot seat.
Loaded question.
Loaded, yeah. Stump the Swami. Okay. Where to begin? Maybe some analogies will help. I don't know if I'll be able to answer in an exact way your question, what is the limit? But I might be able to help that we think more about this in a deeper way. So one analogy is to do with banking, that when someone is suspected by the police, by the government of some crime, often the first thing they will do is contact that person's bank and order the bank to freeze their account. To freeze the account means that that person cannot access his or her money. You can go to the bank and say, I want my money out. Sorry, we can't give it to you. So similarly, the actions, the devotional service, because Krishna does also say, Neha Vikramana Shosti Pratyavayu Namidyate Svalpam Abhi Asya Suvalpam Abhi Asya Dharmasya. Even having done a little bit of devotional service, Trayate Mahato Bayat, this will free one from the fear, Prabhupada explains, of reproof, birth and death. So credit has been gained by someone, and that credit will never be lost, but it may become inaccessible. It may be inaccessible for some time. And for some time is the next point I would want to make. It's interesting, this, I'm hearing this for the first time, that Prabhupada's reaction was, they should be hanged. Ah, that's amazing. As I understand that, what Prabhupada is saying is similar to what he would say about someone is taking intoxication. Kill him! Right? In some lectures he was being so forceful like this. But it's not that then Prabhupada said, I'm serious, go get those people and we're going to string them up. Right? He didn't actually, it wasn't like, yes, now that, but he was in a sense being rhetorical to say they should be dealt with in a very strong way. And we could take it to say that he's saying they should be in some way or another excluded from the society. That's true. So there may be actions that someone commits in which where the appropriate response is they are placed, they are put outside the society. One thing about societies, all sociologists will tell us, is they're constantly defining and redefining their boundaries. Wherever you have a society, you have a boundary, you have a fence. There will be a fence that defines who's inside and who's outside. With ISKCON, we have a special problem. On the one side, we have extremely narrow qualifications for being on the inside, having to do with our regulative principles and our practices. And simultaneously, we're inviting the entire world to join. But then somebody acts in a certain way, which we say, no, that's out of bounds. Sometimes we have to do it. We have to say, that's out of bounds. But now, here's the question. Is that person permanently out of bounds? Is that person out of bounds for the rest of his life? Perhaps there are crimes where one could say, this is our decision, that this person is no longer, can no longer be a member, can no longer do certain functions in the society, whatever it may be. But then the question also comes, is there room for reform of that person? And for certain acts, you and I might feel, no, there's no question of reform, especially when you speak about child abuse, depending on, I would say, depending on the nature of the abuse and the particulars of it. But one might conclude, no, there's no reform. But then again, what is punishment about? What's it for? Ultimately, it's for reform. And that's our whole philosophy. That's why we're here in the material world, etc. It's for reform. And then, to me, the question becomes, is there some facilitation within our society for helping that person to reform? Is there some, you know, psychological behandlung, what is it? Some treatment, some counseling process that could possibly reform this person, or not? It's a question, and I think it's an important question. But then, where exactly is the boundary? That will depend on so many factors. And just one example, and then you can respond to that. In the Bhagavatam, we have the case of Ashvatthama, terrible crime. I mean, how much worse could it get? He murders 5 children in their sleep. And what happens, Krishna says to Arjuna, kill him. Draupadi says, don't kill him, because it just means more suffering for his mother. Then Krishna says, you have to satisfy both of us. One of us says, kill him, and the other says, don't kill him. You have to satisfy both of us. And what's Arjuna's solution? He does something which, when we read it, probably we think, oh gosh, what sort of a punishment is that? That's kind of insignificant. He cuts off his hair and his crest jewel or something and sends him away. Well, what's not clear from the verses, but which is clear from understanding the culture, is he's outcasting that person. And in Indian culture, to be outcasted can indeed be worse than death for a person, depending on, again, so many things. He's being outcasted. But in the Mahabharata, in what's considered sort of the authoritative version of the Mahabharata, it says actually something a bit different. It says that Krishna cursed Ashwatthama to wander in the wild, to wander alone, to be an outcast for 3,000 years. Yeah, that's a pretty heavy, you know, curse. But it was limited. 3,000 years. And we know the story, what's the name of the devotee, Lord Chaitanya said, well, it's going to be...
Mukunda.
After how many years?
10 million.
After 10 million births, he would be allowed, and he jumped in, you know, so much happiness. After 10 million births, I can come back. Lord Chaitanya hears about, all right, 11. So... yeah, these are all considerations.
On your reflection, this regarding the example of Vakrikash Maharaj, how Prabhupada treated that child, your reflection is very nice actually. He treated him as a practically as a devotee, as a senior, not as a, you know, some minor, some child, some unimportant. So therefore, he's a Vaishnava. He's a small Vaishnava.
Yes.
And then you sexually abuse him. Then yeah, you do. I mean, it's very severe Vaishnava para. Or you kill Vaishnava. Then for this, in this dead life, that's my doubt. You know, how to treat it as a society also. Should we go to somebody does something like that, and then should be, you know, considered still sadhu, and you know. For example, if he leaves the body and then we go and we pay obeisances to him, or this. I don't know. You know,
just,
we should have our some kind of dignity, personal dignity. We don't.
Yeah.
These devotees should be, you know, we don't hate them, but we just, I don't know, ignore them or something like that.
Yeah, hate the sin, not the sinner. And unfortunately, I think so much of our thinking about how to think in this such an example is too much covered by forgetfulness of this principle: hate the sin, not the sinner. It's difficult because we look at someone and say, "How could you possibly? How could anyone even?" I don't think I ever even heard of child abuse before I came to the Krishna consciousness movement.
Yeah, I also
when I started hearing about things, well, what? What is that? So, these are horrible things. And let us, and going back to this other subject, why is it that Krishna has put all of us into this situation? So many years ago, of course, there were big court cases in America about this, which involved paying money for settling the case, large amounts of money. And the GBC decided, okay, we have to pay this, otherwise we're going to be losing temples, and so on. And so they made an arrangement with the entire society that all certain designated members, senior members, leaders, whatever, had to help pay for this. And we were given bills. You have to pay now by this and this date such and such amount. And some of us, first we thought, gosh, what? I had nothing to do with this. Absolutely nothing to do with this. I didn't even know what child abuse was, and now I have to pay. But then we understood it's not that we are guilty, but we are responsible. We can take the responsibility. And so when all of these difficult, and they are difficult, questions come up, if we can think in such terms, okay, somehow we are responsible. But here's my final point on this, but related to this one, and that is, what is Krishna trying to tell us? It seems to me that in this context, Krishna is trying to tell us that we need to accelerate, and we need to make so much more professional our education of those who are educating our young. It's such a simple point. I mean, it's kind of too obvious to say, but in the spirit of the early days of our movement, when everything has to happen, we're going to take over the world in 18 days, we were almost convinced. It's all got to be right now. So, oh, you, Prabhu, can you be a teacher? Yeah, sure, why not? Mataji, Prabhu, can you be a teacher? Yes, why not? And suddenly someone who was clueless about this whole subject related to taking care of children are put in with this situation. And others who are responsible for those who are in the position of teacher, they're similarly clueless. Well, hey, maybe we should move on from there. We should start making better education for the educators.
Maybe cultural education and culture.
Yeah, yes, thank you. Education and culture, of course. Yes, I'm starting to hear some stomachs growling. Huh? Stomach, shall we make a pen?
I think, what do you feel? I think it's a good time now to take some prasadam, and then 3 o'clock we have another program. Is it another program? Okay.
Grandharaj Srimad-Bhagavatam-ti Jaya Prabhupada-ti
Jaya
Tor Premanandi
Hari.
Thank you.
Jai.
Jai. Jai.